This is Jay Sekulow. The fourth Democratic debate has taken place. I don't know exactly what it was, but we'll talk about it.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, so we had what was effectively the fourth debate. There's a winners and losers pick. I mean, it was, in my mind, it was pretty much a snoozer. We'll be curious to see what people think. Everyone's saying Elizabeth Warren was the front runner, clearly, and is the winner in this. I guess that's probably true. She certainly sustained the most attack. Bernie Sanders actually looked, I thought he looked pretty good for a guy that had just been in a heart surgery and had a heart attack. He looked strong. I will tell you what I see developing, and then we'll get everybody's comments on this. I see this as a two-person race, but I think two of the people that, or a three-person race maybe, but it's fading pretty quickly. I mean, I view this right now as Warren is, although the polls only have her up about 4 or 5 points, I think you're going to see big changes there. I think Joe Biden looked done to me. He had a rough night. I don't see how he recovers from this. That's what I was going to compare.
It's Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, both of the two older candidates. Bernie Sanders just has a heart attack, two stints put in, had to take time off the campaign trail. He was totally coherent. In fact, maybe more coherent than he's ever been in a debate. Maybe just less of the aggressiveness and more clear. And he realized what he had to do. Like a real politician, he had to reestablish himself as a legitimate candidate for president who just had a heart attack. When these comments came out from like Jimmy Carter saying there's no way he could have been president at 80 years old and dealt with the stress of the job. But then Joe Biden gets up there and he gets into that tit for tat with Warren and Sanders, which is not always a great idea, and gets totally lost in it. I mean, he's totally lost it. What's he talking about with the attacks, which are pretty easy attacks on their Medicare for All plans, and yet he gets totally lost. So I think it was a horrendous night for Joe Biden. He again didn't answer the question that his son said he did talk to his father about Ukraine. Joe Biden said he didn't, but his son went on TV earlier that day and said, yes, he did, at least once. So
I think Biden's done. He's
still leading in some polls of polls, but not of any of the new polls.
So let me, So Than, give me your sense of it. I think we're all going to come to kind of the same conclusion here. But what's your sense of it? And then I want Harry and West to weigh in.
Well, I think the former vice president is out of gas, Jay. I agree on that front. I also think if you look at the reactions of all the other candidates, they agree that Elizabeth Warren is now the front runner. I thought it was very clear by their actions. I do think she probably needs to be a little bit worried by how vigorous Bernie Sanders did look, though, Jay. I don't think he's going to be the nominee. I think his support is cratered too far for that. But the 15% he has left, Jay, it's very fervent, has been with him for a long time. And I think what he did last night was certainly hold on to that for a while. That was the next block she was looking at, Jay. I don't think she gets that for a while.
And he's getting an AOC endorsement. Ocasio-Cortez is endorsing him this weekend.
His big announcement that he kind of let out and then was released during the debate was that three of the four squad members, so, of course, the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, pro-BDS, socialist squad members, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar are all going to be endorsing Bernie Sanders this weekend. Let me say something, though. If I'm Elizabeth Warren, I'm thinking whatever higher power she recognizes. If she does, I don't know if she does, but if she does recognize a higher power, because it's like she played to that base, but she didn't get their endorsement. She would eventually.
Yes,
and that's actually a good thing for her, because if she had AOC and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar with her right now, she's way too radical.
Yeah.
For enough Democrats to put her at the top front runner list, I think that was a good move for Elizabeth. Actually, a thank God moment for Elizabeth Warren, if you will.
Yeah. Back in federal court, the ACLJ today in San Francisco on the case involving Planned Parenthood. We've got more to discuss. Interesting development with the impeachment inquiry. No vote to the floor of the House. What does that tell you? We'll talk about that too. Back with more in just a moment. Don't forget also, support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. You can do that at ACLJ.org, and I encourage you to do it. We're having a really strong month. Your support of the ACLJ, October, November, December, biggest months of the year for us. We encourage you to stand with the ACLJ. Do that at ACLJ.org.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Saying the winners were Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders because he looked healthy and he did look good for a person that just had a major heart issue, and that was impressive. And look, and I don't like his politics, but you always wish individuals well. You don't wish harm or pain or illness on anybody. And I was glad that Bernie looked like he did, Senator Sanders. I thought he looked robust, and clearly he was, you know, fully engaged, and he was stood at 3 hours on your feet, which is pretty impressive. 3 weeks after having a heart attack and having a number of stents put in. Elizabeth Warren clearly was the front runner and clearly, I think, probably the winner last night. Although Gabbard and Buttigieg did very well themselves, but their poll numbers are so low, I just don't see how they get there. Although anything can happen. Let me go to Harry Hutchison, our director of policy. Looking at it from a policy perspective, Harry, like kind of what was discussed, because there wasn't a lot of substance. What was your kind of takeaway?
From a policy perspective, even though many analysts believe that Elizabeth Warren was the winner, I think in some respects she was the loser because she didn't have answers for her policy proposals. So, for instance, with respect to Medicare for All, she could not explain whether the middle class would see their taxes go up for Medicare for All. And that is the centerpiece of her policy proposals. So I thought she was particularly vague there, and I thought Mayor Pete did a very effective job challenging her vagueness. I think actually what we're dealing with respect to Elizabeth Warren is her flagrant dishonesty. And so I think she is a particularly dishonest candidate. This is my reaction. Yeah. And I think the longer she's on stage, the more this will be exposed, even though I think she did solidify her status as the front runner, in part because Joe Biden managed to stumble all over himself. He's a guy that can stumble while he's taking a bath, apparently. Very inarticulate, and his answers did not make a lot of sense.
Wes, do you think Biden's done?
I don't think he's done yet, but it could be the beginning of the beginning of the end, perhaps. I think the interesting thing about the debate last night for me as I watched it was that the Democrats, both the party and the Democrat voters, have a real key question to answer in the 2020 election, and that is, do they want to return, as they see it, to normalcy and civility, or do they want disruption and attacking the status quo? Biden and Mayor Pete and Tulsi Gabbard represent that return to civility and normalcy and all that kind of stuff. Warren, on the other hand, she says a return to normalcy is not good enough, that there should be no compromise. She calls for big disruptive changes.
Yeah.
She not only criticizes the politics of the Trump era, she criticizes the compromise and the politics of the previous administrations, which I think is really interesting. She thinks that political compromise and civility is how we got here. And so she wants to disrupt
everything.
Well,
she said that. I mean, she says enough with that. I mean, it's basically what she said. But I think there's something important here. In the middle of all this, you've got Nancy Pelosi coming out and saying, oh, we're not going to have, at this point, we're not having a vote on the floor on impeachment.
Yep.
Which means the inquiry is exactly what it's been for the last year. Hocus pocus, political theater.
Fake impeachment.
Fake impeachment proceeding. Inquiry. Excuse me. Inquiry. Yeah. Let me play. This is a direct question by Anderson Cooper to Elizabeth Warren on the impeachment issue.
With the election only 1 year away, why shouldn't it be the voters who determine the president's fate?
Because sometimes there are issues that are bigger than politics, and I think that's the case with this impeachment inquiry. When I made the decision to run for president, I certainly didn't think it was going to be about impeachment. But when the Mueller report came out, I read it, all 442 pages. And when I got to the end, I realized that Mueller had shown too fairly well that this president had obstructed justice and done it repeatedly. And so at that moment, I called for opening an impeachment inquiry.
Exactly what report did she read? Because I read the 400, I'm intimately familiar with it. Let me tell you what he did not conclude, that there was obstruction of justice. Remember? I mean, I know it seems like 150 years ago, who's Bob Mueller, but they couldn't even come up with a coherent analysis. And then the last witness they put forward that was put forward was Corey Lewandowski. And how'd that turn out for the Democrats? Not so good.
No more Judiciary Committee hearings.
Not hearing a lot of those these days. So I'm telling you what this is, folks. As we're analyzing the debate, understand exactly what we're dealing with. This is exactly and precisely what we're dealing with. Now, Nancy Pelosi made her statement. Jordan wants us to play it, so we're going to play it.
Yeah, here's the first statement saying why they're not having a vote. Now, they're scared. She's scared of having a vote because she may lose it just to open the inquiry, which means she probably doesn't have the votes to impeach either.
She does not have the
votes. Because if you don't have the votes to open the inquiry, which isn't to impeach, then you don't have the votes to impeach. And if you would have the vote to open an inquiry, it would make their life a lot easier, Dad, legally. Because, I mean, the courts have recognized you open one of those inquiries with an official vote by the House, it's a lot easier to get those subpoenas enforced, correct? I mean,
yes.
But instead, they'd rather have these long, protracted battles with the Trump administration
because they
can't get the votes.
Let me say something here. Their hand in court is weak to begin with, in my view. And there's going to be some of these issues where the courts will rule one way, and then we got to take it up and appeal it, and they'll appeal it, and that's going to go on. Let me tell you something. They know that they would have a bit of a stronger case. I still don't think it's a strong case. If they had an actual impeachment proceeding going on, an actual formal impeachment to the floor with a vote where they're going to recommend articles, they will not do that. Now, Than, before we play Nancy Pelosi, you've been the big advocate that they're going to do this. And I understand that. I mean, listen, I think you could argue it both ways. I have been one that's been saying, I don't think they're going to do it. But again, it's you call it a 50-50. I still say 70-30, they don't. But let's say 50-50. But that is a telling statement. And it's good to have people on the broadcast. We all have some divergent views on this. Sure. And I think that's healthy. That is a pretty telling statement, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying in D.C. that I've said many times on this broadcast, when you have the votes, you take the votes, Jay. I do think what she said yesterday is indicative of the fact that she does not have the votes. Look, when you don't have grounds to move forward, it's also hard to find someone to run it. That's why they took it away from Jerry Nadler. That's why it's having trouble with Adam Schiff. I mean, you know, in their defense, which I don't really want to defend them, Jay, but in their defense, when you don't have evidence, it is hard to run an inquiry. So that's why they're running into some problems. Look, I'll tell you, I continue to believe they crossed a political Rubicon. They'll probably take an articles vote.
Then why will they not refer to the floor in the next week or two? Why are they not doing that, Than? If they're going to because if they take an articles vote without, I mean, here's a question for you. There's a legal issue, of course, because the Constitution says the House shall have the power to impeach, not a committee. So I think there's a big legal hurdle. Why will they not? Let's say if they don't have the votes for opening a formal inquiry, how are they going to have the votes for articles of impeachment?
Oh, I fully agree with you on that point, and I think it was very well illustrated when Matt Gaetz, a member of the Judiciary Committee, tried to participate in this process and was not allowed to. If the Constitution gives the full House authority, Jay, how is a member of the House, particularly a member of the Committee of Jurisdiction, not allowed to participate?
Because
so I fully agree with you.
It's not right. real.
To answer your question, why they're not.
Dan, it's not real.
Yeah.
I mean, this is political theater. Now, listen, I want to break down what Nancy Pelosi actually said. Take a listen.
Distinguished Chairman said there's no requirement that we have a vote, and so we, at this time we will not be having a vote. And I'm very pleased with the thoughtfulness of our caucus in terms of being supportive of the path that we are on in terms of fairness, in terms of seeking the truth.
I'm going to get into this at great length on the broadcast tomorrow, but let me just tell you this. In my view, I'm going to go to Harry on this too. I agree with Ann. You have the vote. If you got the votes, they don't have the votes. That's what I think. They don't want the 20 or 30 seats that were in territory the president won in 2016 to be put in that position. Well, how are they going to be put in a position to actually vote on articles? Because if you don't get those 30, guess what you don't get? Articles of impeachment.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I like about Nancy Pelosi is her inability to offer a straightforward answer. So she talks about fairness, but there's nothing fair about what the House is doing under the leadership of Adam Schiff, who is simply the poster child for collusion, conspiracy theories, and fabrication. He continues to promise more than he can deliver. He promised us the testimony of the whistleblower. Now he says that the released transcript of the phone call is the best evidence of the president's intent. And so I think it's clear beyond question that Adam Schiff is beginning to back away from his prior reliance on the whistleblower, because the whistleblower really has nothing to say. The whistleblower was not on the call. The transcript is the best evidence, according to Schiff. So if Nancy Pelosi continues to insist on fairness, let's have fairness. Let's allow the Republicans to cross-examine witnesses, for instance.
Well, they're not allowing any of that.
And they're so confused. Remember, New York Times said in February 2017, the Trump War Room tweeted it out. They said, "We want to impeach Trump." That was February 2017. Now listen to Nancy Pelosi. She's getting it all confused. This was her press conference in the middle of a Democrat debate last night by 155.
We were sending that of military assistance because of Ukraine needing that vis-a-vis Russia. All roads seem to lead to Putin with the president, though. Isn't it so?
First the Mueller report, then Ukraine. It was the Obama administration that let Russia annex Crimea. They just want to impeach the president or talk like they're going to impeach the president to damage him politically. That's all it's about. I'm starting to agree more with you, Dad. First, I thought they were going to rush an impeachment. Now I think they're just doing a phony impeachment.
All right, back with more in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. On the second half hour, we're going to take a look at some of the military issues, Syria that was discussed, some of the economic issues as well. But you can't be remiss on the abortion issue because this is a party that is in love with where they worship Roe versus Wade. And are we going to start with Senator Harris? So Senator Harris, who I thought had a okay, not a what do you think? I mean, let me get everybody. Well, go to Wes. I don't think she had a great night.
She did not have a great night. She was, you know, what little bit she talked, it was okay. She did not even get a base hit, much less a home run last night.
Let me ask a question about that. I mean, at some point, doesn't the DNC have to say, Than and Jordan, that this format is not helpful?
Well, see, here's the problem. She's already qualified for the next debate, which is November 20th, based on polls and donors. So at least eight have qualified. Yang, Steyer, Booker, Ward, Sanders, Harris, Mayor Pete, and Joe Biden. The one other that people thought had a good night last night was Amy Klobuchar. She's got the donors, but she doesn't have the polls yet, and it's hard to see her getting the polls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably the field is narrowing, but Kamala Harris is in the top four or five. Now, she went from being like kind of the darling of the race until Joe Biden got in. And she couldn't keep her second place position very long.
Now she's about fifth.
And now she's kind of just middle of the pack. And she has money, but seems to be just fading every time she has this moment. And you know what? The Time Magazine article about her I thought was pretty telling. It was pretty much a puff piece, except for they said, are we going to really be able to deal with a president who only talks in platitudes?
Yeah.
And that doesn't sell to voters.
What do you think about that one? Because I always thought that Kamala Harris was going to be the one that kind of rolled out on this. I mean, that was my view, Than.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I've long thought there was a lane for her in this race. She just failed to take advantage of it, Jay.
Yeah.
And I honestly think she's missed her opportunity, and that's closed. I actually thought, I know you're going to go to the abortion clips here in just a minute, but I thought she tried to use that issue last night as a way to force her way back into relevancy. I don't think it worked. And just on the larger question, Jay, you know, last night was long and crowded, but guess what? The next debate is going to be too. I mean, eight, nine, ten candidates is going to be long and crowded too.
This. How do you draw? I know that thing. I don't know. How do you draw a distinction with this kind of numbers on the table? It's very difficult.
It is, and the people in the lower ranks of this are trying to make outlandish statements or extreme positions in order to get some headlines. And then, of course, Warren and Sanders and Joe Biden are the top three. And they're not really that impressive. When you come right down to it, Warren is strong. She's a strong candidate. Biden is waffling, as you said. Sanders, you know.
I just don't think he's going to be able to make it.
Here's the interesting thing I found about last night, and I did not realize this until Anderson Cooper asked the question, and that is all three of these candidates will be in their 70s when they're inaugurated if they become president, including Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
She'll be 71 when she's inaugurated.
Yeah. Not that that's a young right now.
Hey, I'm approaching that age myself. What can I say?
Yeah, I mean, right. But I mean, there's a generational fight going inside the DNC.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
But I think that Bernie Sanders, by getting the AOC endorsement and the Rashida,
he's going to try to be hip.
You know what he is? He's the second place guy again. I think he's just accepted that again. I mean, he can't win with those kind of endorsements and the health issues and the policy positions when you've got an Elizabeth Warren out there who basically has your message without your crazy social radicalism, and you're not, she doesn't call herself.
But I mean, if you're the Democratic National Committee, you got to say to yourself, it did not work for Hillary Clinton, Harry. How's it going to work for Elizabeth Warren?
Well, it may not work, but I also think that the Democrats have decided to bet on this particular horse, and it's perhaps too late for them to change. I think that the left-wing base of the Democrats is even more radical in 2020 than they were in 2016. And I think the Democrats are going to have to put up with a left-wing nominee, and then that left-wing nominee is going to have to explain her positions to the American people. For instance, why take away private health insurance from 150 million Americans, including from Medicare recipients who have private insurance as well?
You know, it's interesting here. We've been talking about Kamala Harris. Let's play the question about Roe versus Wade and abortion, and Senator Harris's answer.
Senator Harris, if states prevail on restricting abortion, what's your plan to stop them?
My plan is as followed, as follows. For any state that passes a law that violates the Constitution, and in particular Roe v. Wade, our Department of Justice will review that law to determine if it is compliant with Roe v. Wade and the Constitution, and if it is not, that law will not go into effect. That's called preclearance.
Yeah, there you go. So it's called, we're going to basically be abortion on demand no matter what, and preclearance of laws before they're even, you don't even know what the, as the state laws are reviewed, they're just going to, they'll assume they're unconstitutional.
Well, I tweeted this out last night. I mean, other than Tulsi Gabbard, we'll play her. She was the only candidate on stage as a woman as well, who even said there should be some restrictions on abortion in the third trimester. I mean, the third trimester, and she was an outlier. The Planned Parenthood clearly owns the Democrat Party. They own the platform. They write the platform. And everybody from Joe Biden, who switched his position on the Hyde Amendment, is now saying to codify Roe versus Wade, to make it part of U.S. law, such as based off constitutional law from the Supreme Court. It is a party. None of them but Tulsi Gabbard. And they can correct the record if they want after this. None of them called for any kind of restrictions on abortion. We now know what that means from Planned Parenthood, Dad. That means, because we've heard him testify, abortion up until right before birth. And none of them but Tulsi Gabbard, I have to give her some credit for actually saying, hey, there is a line to be drawn here, even if you're pro-abortion. Take a listen.
Yeah, let's play it.
I do, however, think that there should be some restrictions in place. I support codifying Roe v. Wade while making sure that during the third trimester, abortion is not an option, unless the life or severe health consequences of a woman are at risk. Thank you.
Well, she does not, that does not buy the, let me tell you something. That's why I think, yes, listen, I think she's a very good, she's very smart. I mean, I don't agree with her Roe versus Wade analysis, but I understand it, you know, I understand the body politic on it.
Yeah.
But then for her to say, third trimester, it shouldn't be happening, basically. I mean, what were the exact words she used? Let's be very clear here. I mean, she was
not an option unless there's severe health consequences.
And that doesn't mean just the health of the mother.
That is not health, right? That's not the Planned Parenthood line of health of the mother. Like,
so she doesn't
I don't
get
want to be
nominated.
Pregnant anymore because it
okay,
hurts to be
so
pregnant.
So she's, it's people like her, but she does not get nominated, correct?
No, she does not get nominated, but she does at least keep some kind of more rational opinion
something in check
within the Democrat
yeah,
Party.
That's a good thing, I guess.
In the House of Representatives. And I think it's because we saw it yesterday on our show.
Yep.
Everyone said if they had to choose a Democrat, she would be their choice.
Yep.
We got no one else.
Yep.
Concerning, you know, Harris's comment too, you know, and I'm not a lawyer, though I have something of a law degree, a master's.
You do have a law degree.
At the same time, she's equating the constitutional, like it guarantees abortion. We have legal precedent, Roe v. Wade,
right,
that guarantees it. There is nothing directly in the Constitution about a right to abortion.
No, well,
she's saying that, assuming that the American people will fall for that.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that she said the thing about the third trimester, because it's the whole partial birth abortion issue. I mean, it just becomes very clear very quickly, in my view, that while she was popular with our audience on yesterday's broadcast, when I say popular, people said if you had to vote for a Democrat, who would it be? I don't think that gets you, Than, there's no way that gets you the nomination, right? I mean, that almost disqualified her right there, unfortunately. Although I'm with Jordan, I think at least she gives a check in place.
Well, it's too moderate of a position, but think about that state, Jay. The moderate position inside the Democrat Party is codification of Roe v. Wade. Wow.
Yeah. No, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, we are here for another half hour, so we're going to get into some of the law, economics, foreign policy issues coming right up. Again, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. You're getting emails. We're in court with Planned Parenthood today. Also, Jordan's book, The Next Red Wave, available everywhere you buy your books. NextRedWave.com. Barnes & Noble in particular. That was yesterday's call because he's doing well there. We'll be back with more in a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
I'm talking about freedom. I'm talking about Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the second half hour of the broadcast. So we had the Democratic debate yesterday with something else. Everybody, I think the consensus is, for the most part, that Elizabeth Warren is clearly the front runner. Now, the other two main candidates are Biden and Sanders. I don't see a path for either one of them in this race. That's my view. Now, I want to get everybody's view on this. I'm going to start with Than. I don't see it. I don't see how Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden make it through this. Than?
Yeah, no, I said that. I think Joe Biden is out of gas. Look, he has trouble working through these issues more than one layer at a time, Jay. So I think he's on the decline. Obviously, Bernie Sanders is even further behind him, Jay. I think the loss of support is going to be slower for him, though, because it's more fervent and longer held. So I actually think he's going to be in second place in a matter of a couple of months. But I agree with you. I don't think either one of those two is the nominee.
Harry?
I agree with Than. I think, in particular, I agree with his comment on Bernie Sanders. I thought Bernie Sanders was coherent. He was lively. He was direct. And he understood the questions. With Joe Biden, I think it was clear beyond question, A, he didn't fully understand the questions. And number two, he offered jumbled answers that suggested that he really wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, Biden was called by everybody as the biggest loser. I mean, if you go to the liberal media, which is where I go to, it's what I was tweeting out, because I think that's who you want to go to judge the Democrat debate, not us as much as kind of giving you analysis of based off what Democrats are saying and what they're feeling. And what their immediate reaction was, Joe Biden was the biggest loser. And he wasn't the biggest loser because of just Ukraine, though he did misstate again that he didn't talk to his son about it, even though his son said in an interview that was planned the morning of the debate that he did, in fact, talk to his father about the Ukraine deal that joining the board at least once. So he, but then he had Cory Booker try to come in to attack the New York Times and CNN for asking the question. It's a legitimate question, Cory Booker. And that was, so again, he was a big loser also, Cory Booker, last night. And that was not good for Joe Biden. Here's why. When you look at cash on hands, quarter three filings, Bernie Sanders in the lead. He's a great fundraiser. He's got $33 million on hand. But just behind him is Elizabeth Warren with almost $26 million. That's big. And she's not taking any PAC money, any corporate money. Right behind her, interesting enough, is Mayor Pete. And then it's a huge drop. Kamala Harris only has 10, and then we still haven't gotten to Biden yet.
Yep.
He is under 9 million.
Yeah, so I think he's done. What do you think, Wes?
Well, you know, I still think electability is a factor. It may not be the factor. Yeah. Certainly Warren is the strongest candidate, and Joe Biden is hurting himself, and he's not a strong candidate and probably won't be the nominee. Some of the political pundits, though, on several of the networks over the last week have been conjecturing whether or not, because Warren probably is not electable in a general election, whether or not there will be a dark horse candidate, either part of this pool of candidates or someone outside the pool, who will actually step in order to try and address the issue of electability. Because Elizabeth Warren, a strong candidate, she certainly appeals to the left-wing base of the Democrat Party, but would be, I think, a weak candidate in a general election. I simply don't think that middle-of-the-road voters, independents, Republicans, moderate Democrats are going to go along with her disruptive calls for change and for fundamentally restructuring the economy of the United States of America, as well as our political policy.
No, I think I agree with you, Wes. I don't see any way right now that Elizabeth Warren is not the nominee.
No, I mean, the New York Times, Frank Bruni, who is a big op-ed writer, very liberal, he said, it was the best of Warren, it was the worst of Warren. She's the front runner. His worst of Warren we're going to get to in the next segment. But I think she's got a plan there. I think these pundits are, sometimes they don't see the big picture. She's letting Bernie Sanders, like taking the AOC endorsement, taking the squad endorsement, the radical endorsement.
She's letting
Bernie Sanders say, yeah, there'll be a tax increase, while she's talking about how our costs will go down for
everybody. And she puts Buttigieg on the ticket as VP?
I don't think she's gotten that far yet, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I don't think that any of them are thinking about who to put on the ticket yet. They want to win.
All right, don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ. We're having a great month. ACLJ.org. Your financial support makes a huge difference. Also, Jordan's book, The Next Red Wave, available at bookstores everywhere. Very relevant to what we're talking about. We encourage you to get a copy of that. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. Back with more in a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
We had a fan. See, I get to see all the monitors. We do this multi. It's like how many camera shoot is it? Six? Five, six with fan up there? Eight? It's a multi-camera shoot, to say the least, of those you're watching on TV, Facebook, or Periscope, wherever you're watching it. So I get to see fans' comments. So, Than, you were shaking your head there right before the break. What were you going to say?
Well, I just totally agree with Jordan that it's actually a good thing that Bernie Sanders looked pretty good last night for this reason, Jay. I mean, 13 months is an eternity in politics, and I don't think she wants him to collapse right now. I think she wants him to continue to draw some of that radical left-wing support like the AOC, go along, not in a threatening mode, but in that 15% range, and maybe get out of the race in a few months, at which point she doesn't have to carry that support that isn't as naturally hers as it is his for as long. I actually think it's a pretty good strategic plan. I think his strength last night is actually helpful to Senator Warren.
Yeah, I know. I tend to think that, too. All right, let's look at you, Jordan. You want to take a look at the money?
Yeah, the money. How do you pay for Medicare for all? Now, this is what I was talking about with Frank Bruni trying to say this was the worst moment for Elizabeth Warren. It's certainly worse. First of all, you got to take punches if you're going to be the front runner. She took them last night, and she was not rattled. So I think she did pretty well there. I think it was the best of Elizabeth Warren that we've seen. I don't know that it appeals to the American people. I'm just talking about inside the Democrat Party. But she did get hit by Mayor Pete, because Mayor Pete said, you know, you're the plan for all candidate. You've got plans for everything except for how are you going to pay for Medicare for all? Take a listen, Bite 26.
Mayor Buttigieg, you say Senator Warren has been, quote, evasive about how she's going to pay for Medicare for all. What's your response?
Well, we heard it tonight, a yes or no question that didn't get a yes or no answer. Look, this is why people here in the Midwest are so frustrated with Washington in general and Capitol Hill in particular. Your signature, Senator, is to have a plan for everything except this. No plan has been laid out to explain how a multi-trillion dollar hole in this Medicare for All plan that Senator Warren is putting forward is supposed to get filled in.
All right, so Harry, I want to go to you this. You're the law and economics professor. I mean, they throw out these plans with no financial planning.
Absolutely. So I think it's important to note that Elizabeth Warren likes to talk in aggregates, as if all of us, all of our lives are lived at average. This is nonsense on stilts. Many of us have healthcare challenges. Others do not. So assume a middle class, a couple with three kids making $80,000 in the Midwest, and they don't have any current or future healthcare challenges. More likely than not, Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All plan will require a raise in taxes for this middle-class family. She doesn't want to admit that. And that would mean that their cost would indeed go up because they would have to subsidize some other family. So I think it's clear beyond question that Mayor Pete hit the nail on the head with his comments. And it is clear beyond question that Elizabeth Warren was, as usual, very evasive. I don't think she can continue down this evasive path for very long. She will have to answer the question. Otherwise, she will be seen as a dishonest candidate.
But who takes... Here's what I'm trying to figure out. And I'll go to Wes on this. And I want, Than, you comment on this too. Who takes her out? Where is the... What converges to take Elizabeth Warren out of it?
I don't think anyone is in a position to take her out, quite frankly. I really don't. She does, though, epitomize the politician who not only, you know, tells you the answers that you want to hear in order to get your vote, she's also the epitome of the politician who will not answer a question, even though you keep asking it over and over again.
Yeah. So, Than, on the, and I know you and Jordan have done this because you've done campaigns, but how, if you're looking at her pathway, she's going to spend money everywhere. She's got the money. She's going to spend it. She's going to put the infrastructure in place. How do they get her off kilter right now?
Yeah, I think nobody in the field can. Nobody in the field can, Jay. I mean, look at the early states. She's going to win Iowa based on all the polling. She's going to win New Hampshire based on all the polling. The only threat to her in Nevada is Joe Biden. I imagine by then he won't be a threat.
Same if thing she in goes South into Carolina, South probably not a threat by then.
Four states in, though, if she's won all of the first three, I mean, look, I don't think anybody in this field can take her on. It would have to be somebody from outside of it, and it's getting awfully late for that. I would tell you this, though, Jay. I actually thought Joe Biden's best moment of last night came on this very issue where he said, look, you could eliminate the entire defense budget, including the Pentagon and all its buildings, and it pays for 25% of your plan. That's
all right,
reality.
Let's play that.
Just to clarify, Vice President, who are you saying is being vague?
Well, the senator said she's being vague on the issue of, actually both of them being vague on the issue of the Medicare for All. No, look, here's the deal. It costs $30 trillion. Guess what? That's over $3 trillion a year. It's part of the entire federal budget. Let me finish, okay?
You'll both get in.
If you eliminated the entire Pentagon, every single thing, plane, ship, troop, the buildings, everything, satellites, it would get you, it would pay for a total of 4 months. 4 months. Where do you get the rest?
Increased taxes.
Exactly.
Which Bernie Sanders, unlike Elizabeth Warren, did admit. I mean, Bernie Sanders said, yes, your taxes will go up. Take a listen.
Well, as somebody who wrote the bill, as I said, let's be clear. Under the Medicare for All bill that I wrote, premiums are gone. Copayments are gone. Deductibles are gone. All out-of-pocket expenses are gone. We're going to do better than the Canadians do, and that is what they have managed to do. At the end of the day, the overwhelming majority of people will save money on their health care bills. But I do think it is appropriate to acknowledge that taxes will go up. They're going to go up significantly for the wealthy. And for virtually everybody, the tax increase they pay will be substantially less than what they were paying for premiums and out-of-pocket expenses.
So, Harry, does that work? And we'll go to Wes, too, but Harry.
Well, no, I think Bernie Sanders, again, is a bit mistaken, particularly in his reliance on Canada. It's important to note that Canada, the Canadian government, does not pay for one's entire health care bill, contrary to what Senator Sanders says. So many things, for instance, in Ontario are not covered. So, for instance, if you have audiology problems, not covered. Dental work, generally, not covered. Basic eye care, not covered. And if you wish, for instance, a semi-private room in a hospital, you have to pay for it. So the claim that the Canadians pay for everything and there are no copays is simply nonsense on stilts. And I think Bernie Sanders is channeling his inner Adam Schiff when he claims that there are no copays with respect to the Canadian plan. So I think that Bernie Sanders doesn't understand what's going on in Canada. He doesn't understand what's going on in Great Britain. Keep in mind, in Canada, they ration healthcare. The average MRI wait for healthcare in Canada is 5 months, meaning that many individuals who are suffering from a debilitating illness could indeed be dead before they are eligible for an MRI.
Yeah, and this is why so many Canadians travel to the United States for their medical care, yep. And yet Bernie wants to bring that here as well. You know, the one thing about Bernie Sanders, I will say, though, and this is his appeal to young people, he's honest. He will tell you, yes, I'm going to raise taxes. Yep. He doesn't pull any punches. And even though his policies are so misguided and they reflect his enamorment with socialism and the Soviet Union, at the same time, he tells it straight, and that appeals to young people. Whereas Elizabeth Warren, what she is not saying, but she knows it's true, in my opinion, and that is she will raise taxes on the middle class in order to pay for this. She's evasive and dodging the question because she knows the answer to that question, and she doesn't want to state it.
Well, I'm going to play Amy Klobuchar's, at least a portion of this, because this kind of tells you exactly what it is about. Understand where your taxes are going here. Take a listen.
At least Bernie's being honest here and saying how he's going to pay for this and that taxes are going to go up. And I'm sorry, Elizabeth, but you have not said that. And I think we owe it to the American people to tell them where we're going to send the invoice. I believe the best and boldest idea here is to not trash Obamacare, but to do exactly what Barack Obama wanted to do from the beginning, and that's have a public option that would bring down the cost of the premium and expand the number of people covered and take on the pharmaceutical companies. That is what we should be doing.
All right, so, Fan, what's her... I mean, she was honest. She was clear. She said it's going to increase taxes under Bernie's plan. Where do you think, what is her shot right now? She's not even necessarily on the stage, as Jordan said, on the next debate.
Yeah, I don't think she has one. I don't think she can even qualify for the next debate, honestly, even though she did well. Look, I agree with her answer there. I also agree with Senator Sanders that you should say how you're going to play with pay for things. But, Jay, here's the dirty little secret. The vagueness is working. I mean, we can poke fun of Senator Warren for not answering the question all you want, and it's a little ironic because there's so much specificity in all of her plans except for this, so it sticks out like a sore thumb. But guess what? It's working. She's the front runner. She's going to continue to be vague.
All right, we're going to be back with more of your calls and comments in just a moment. Don't forget, ACLJ.org, your support of the American Center for Law and Justice. We're in court against Planned Parenthood right now. As we speak, we're in court. We'll have updates on that on tomorrow's broadcast as well. And don't forget Jordan's book, The Next Red Wave, available wherever books are sold. Last segment coming up in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists.
You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
Last segment. So we go into the last segment here. Let me start with Jordan here. You have done presidential campaigns, a number of them.
Yeah.
If you were picking one right now that's got the most likely chance of success, who would that be, and what are the reasons why?
Right now, if she makes no more missteps, no more Pocahontas moments, and could get a better answer on the Medicare for All, but she took those punches. I think she's just letting Bernie Sanders take that and answer it, and he did. And she's not, by the way, she didn't like disagree with Bernie when he said there would be tax increases. Right. So she didn't get the crazy radical endorsements, but they will eventually come along with her. So she'll get the far left. She will. It's Elizabeth Warren. It's a great actual political comeback story, because that Pocahontas thing and putting out that genetic test was pretty bad. I don't know if she is their best general election candidate, but that's not the question you ask. You ask who is likely to win this nomination right now. She has the best operation. She has the most plans on paper. She's got the money, and she took the punches last night. She was the big winner of the biggest debate yet, and Joe Biden was the big loser. And that's exactly what Elizabeth Warren needed. A Joe Biden that continues to fade, other candidates not making a mark like Kamala Harris, not making kind of a comeback, Mayor Pete kind of just being Mayor Pete, I think he'll do fine, but I don't see him winning anywhere. And Bernie Sanders kind of embracing that outsider second place, I'm the socialist guy again, which may be all he's up to this time. But, you know, he'll get the AOC endorsements, which means he could eventually bring those along to Elizabeth Warren and have some influence, more influence than he's ever had on a presidential campaign.
Okay. Harry?
Well, I think Jordan's analysis is absolutely spot on. I think so far, Elizabeth Warren has been the Teflon candidate. She is articulate. She's smart. And she knows how to be evasive and dodge answers that might be damaging to her candidacy. I think in many respects, she's been fortunate in her opponents. They have been unable or unwilling to go after her strongly, particularly when she was down in the polls. And I think now that Biden is stumbling and Sanders has his health issues, that Warren is the clear and unmistakable front runner. I think individuals like Buttigieg and perhaps Klobuchar will continue to make smart attacks on Warren. But right now, she's above the fray. I think she's the clear front runner in three out of the four initial primary states. And I think that's where the race is. I think many Democrats, including perhaps Sherrod Brown of Ohio, would like to see another candidate enter the race because, for instance, he has mentioned that Medicare for All is a great aspiration, but it's impractical. Right now, I don't see anyone else coming into the race. And I think if anyone came in at a late stage, then this would upset the leftist base of the Democrat Party, and the issue would then become, will they turn out in the general election?
Wes?
Yeah, the left base of the Democrat Party, and they are strong and they are loud, they are not going to elect the next president of the United States. I'll be the first to confess, I do not understand the enamorment with Elizabeth Warren. But in fact, I will also admit, it is real. I see her as the strongest candidate. I think, like Than said, 13 months is an eternity in politics. But barring something happening that we can't see now, I think she will be the nominee. I still, because I like politics and I really do not like Elizabeth Warren, I keep hoping against hope that there is another candidate, probably not one of the 11 others on the stage last night, but someone who will come in perhaps and be the dark horse nominee. But in reality, that's probably not going to happen.
Probably not. Than, what's your view on where it is? I want to give mine in a minute. I'll tell you what I think, but go ahead.
Jay, until a couple of weeks ago when you asked this question, I responded and said, if you offered me Joe Biden or the field, I would take the field, but I wasn't sure who that candidate would be that emerged. And if I could only pick one candidate, you would have to take Joe Biden because of how his political force works in the electoral map. Jay, I don't think that's true anymore. Now, if you offered me one candidate, I would definitely take Elizabeth Warren. She has been the one that has emerged out of the field. In fact, Joe Biden would be fairly far down my list. I also don't see a path for anybody else in the field. And you know what? With this conversation about someone outside of the field getting in, Jay, it's so late in that process. That would have to be a powerhouse. I mean, there may be a name that can do it, but it's not going to be someone like a Sherrod Brown or a senator or, you know, a governor. It would have to be a real powerhouse to get in at this point. I would take Elizabeth Warren. At this point, Jay, I would take Elizabeth Warren. Even if offered the field against her, I would still take her.
All right. So let me tell you where I think it is right now. This is my thought. I think right now Elizabeth Warren is the clear front runner. I think Joe Biden is not going to make it through this process. I don't see him winning it primary. Maybe South Carolina, they people say, but by then I think he's done. I think Bernie Sanders, who looked much better than I thought he was going to look as far as health goes, and I'm glad to see that. You know, like I said, I'm glad he's well. I understand that he had a major heart procedure and a major heart procedure, heart attack, and then stents is not an insignificant event. But I just don't see his numbers getting there. So other than someone coming out of nowhere, okay, ultimately as this progresses forward, I believe that Elizabeth Warren will probably be, I think, and that's not any rocket science. I think Elizabeth Warren will probably be the nominee. The question then becomes, what does she do for a running mate? Where does that go? Is it somebody like Cory Booker, who's this another sitting senator? In other words, do you want two senators running? Does she go with Jordan? You said
I thought someone would be interesting, like Andrew Gillum in Florida, who almost won't beat Ron DeSantis in Florida.
Almost puts Florida maybe back in play.
Mayor of Tallahassee, African American, almost beat DeSantis in a pretty easily Republican gubernatorial political makeup. So, I mean, do you go somewhere more interesting, kind of get outside of this field? She might have to stay inside the field because of just political realities of putting a coalition together. But if she does it, I think she could go to some people that are more interesting, more unique.
I think that, and less exposed.
Yeah,
you know, two real contenders for her VP slot, if she gets the nomination, might be Gabbard or Mayor Pete. They both, you know, she's going to have to tack back towards the center somehow. On that field, they are more moderate. Both of them are military veterans. Yep. That will appeal to a certain segment of the population. I think either of those would be a strong vice presidential candidate for her, but I don't know.
I just don't know. You look, Mayor Pete's had trouble running a city. I mean,
Agree with her Medicare for All.
And he does not agree with Medicare for All.
That's true.
Yeah, so, I mean,
how far is she going to try to move to the middle will be the big question if she gets the nomination. We don't know that yet.
All right, so, Than, you know, because I know you served in the House of Representatives as a senior staff person. I want to go back to the impeachment thing for a moment as we close the broadcast up. We're going to talk about this on tomorrow's broadcast. I thought that was a bit of a retreat last night from Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, I think it was a retreat. They're back in town. I think they're going to try desperately to focus on other things because I think they're losing this. You know, Jay, I've said this before. Ultimately, I don't think they can retreat all the way. I think Nancy Pelosi would like to, and I think you saw that last night. The reason they never took the initial vote, Jay, is because they can't stand the heat of a real inquiry with subpoenas and all. That's why she made that statement yesterday.
All right, well, that's going to pretty much do it for the broadcast today. Let me encourage you, tomorrow's broadcast, we're going to get into at length kind of where this impeachment issue is. We're going to have more updates on the situation with Planned Parenthood, so we need that as well. Again, let me encourage you, support the work at the ACLJ at aclj.org, aclj.org. Don't forget Jordan's book, The Next Red Wave, available wherever you get your books. We'll talk to you on tomorrow's broadcast.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now.